Chapter 12, Seafaring Life. In the interval between my first and second voyage after my marriage, I began to keep a sort of diary, a practice which I have since found of great use. I had in this interval repeated proofs of the ingratitude and evil of my heart. A life of ease in the midst of my friends, and the full satisfaction of my wishes was not favorable to the progress of grace. Yet upon the whole, I gained ground. I became acquainted with books which gave me a further view of Christian doctrine and experience, particularly Scougal's Life of God in the Soul of Man, Hervey's Meditations, and the Life of Colonel Gardiner. I heard none but the common sort of preaching, neither had I the advantage of Christian acquaintance. I was likewise greatly hindered by a cowardly, reserved spirit, for I was afraid of being thought precise. Though I could not live without prayer, I did not propose it even to my wife till she herself urged it. I was far from those expressions of zeal and love which seem so suitable to the case of one who has had much forgiven. When the returning season called me abroad again, I sailed from Liverpool in a new ship, July 1752. A seafaring life is necessarily excluded from the benefit of public ordinances and Christian communion. In other respects, I know not any calling that affords greater advantages to an awakened soul for promoting the life of God in the soul, especially to a person who has the command of a ship. He has it in his power to restrain gross irregularities in others, and to dispose of his own time. It is more so in African voyages, as these ships carry a double portion of men and officers to most others. This made my department very easy, and excepting the occasional hurry of trade on the coast, afforded me leisure. Divine Providence and Communion. In these circumstances, one is out of the reach of innumerable temptations. With opportunity and turn of mind, disposed to observe the wonders of God in the great deep. The two noblest objects of sight, the expanded heavens and the expanded ocean, are continually in view. Interpositions of divine providence in answer to prayer occur almost every day. All these are helps to quicken and confirm the life of faith, and in a good measure supply to a religious sailor the want of those advantages which can be enjoyed only upon the shore. Indeed, though my knowledge of spiritual things was at this time very small, I sometimes look back with regret upon these scenes. I never knew sweeter or more frequent hours of divine communion than in my two last voyages to Guinea, when almost secluded from society on shipboard, or when on shore amongst the natives. I have wandered through the woods, reflecting on the singular goodness of the Lord to me, in a place where perhaps there was not a person that knew him for some thousand miles around me. Many a time upon these occasions I have restored the beautiful lines of Propertius to their right owner, lines full of blasphemy and madness when addressed to a creature, but full of comfort and propriety in the mouth of a believer. In desert wood, with thee, my God, where human footsteps never trod, how happy could I be? Thou my repose from care, my light, amidst the darkness of the night, in solitude my company. Slave Trading. In the course of this voyage, I was wonderfully preserved in the midst of many obvious and unforeseen dangers. At one time, there was a conspiracy among my own people to turn pirates and take the ship from me. When the plot was nearly ripe and they waited only a convenient opportunity, two of them concerned in it were taken ill one day. One of them died, and he was the only person I buried while on board. This suspended the affair and led to its discovery, or the consequences might have been fatal. The slaves on board were likewise frequently plotting insurrections. Sometimes they were upon the very brink of mischief, but it was always disclosed in due time. When I have thought myself most secure, I have been suddenly alarmed with danger. And when I have almost despaired of life, a sudden deliverance has been vouchsafed me. Frequently near death. At one time, I was at a place called Mena, near Cape Mount, where I had transacted very large concerns. At the time, I had some debts and accounts to settle, which required my attendance on shore, and I intended to go the next morning. I left the ship according to my purpose, but when I came near the shore, the surf ran so high that I was almost afraid to attempt landing. I had often ventured at a worse time, but I felt an inward hindrance and backwardness which I could not account for. The surf furnished a pretext, and after hesitating for about half an hour, I returned to the ship without doing my business, which I never did but that morning in all the time I used that trade. I soon perceived the reason for all this. The day before I intended to land, a scandalous and groundless charge had been laid against me, by whose instigation I could never learn, which greatly threatened my honor and interest, both in Africa and England, and would perhaps, humanly speaking, have affected my life if I had landed according to my intention. I was very uneasy for a few hours, but was soon comforted. I heard no more of my accusation till the next voyage, when it was publicly acknowledged to be a malicious calumny without the least shadow of a ground. Such were the vicissitudes and difficulties through which the Lord preserved me. Faith and patience were sharply exercised, but suitable strength was given. As such things did not occur every day, the study of the Latin was renewed and carried on from time to time when business would permit. I was mostly very regular in the management of my time. I allotted 8 hours for sleep and meals, 8 hours for exercise and devotion, and 8 hours to my books. Thus, by diversifying my engagements, the whole day was agreeably filled up, and I seldom found a day too long or an hour to spare. My studies kept me employed, otherwise they were hardly worth the time they cost, as they led me to an admiration of false models and false maxims, an almost unavoidable consequence of an admiration of the classic authors. Abating what I have attained of the language, I think I might have read Cassandra or Cleopatra to as good purpose as I read Livy, whom I now account an equal romancer, though in a different way. From the coast I went to St. Christopher's, and here my idolatrous heart was its own punishment. The letters I expected from Mrs. Newton were by mistake forwarded to Antigua, which had been at first proposed as our port. As I was certain of her punctuality in writing, if alive, I concluded by not hearing from her that she was surely dead. This fear affected me more and more. I lost my appetite and rest. I felt an incessant pain in my stomach, and in about 3 weeks' time I was under the weight of an imaginary stroke. I felt some severe symptoms of that mixture of pride and madness which is commonly called a broken heart. Indeed, I wonder that this case is not more common than it appears to be. How often do the potsherds of the earth presume to contend with their Maker? And what a wonder of mercy is it that they are not all broken? However, my complaint was not all grief. Conscience had a share. I thought my unfaithfulness to God had deprived me of her, especially my backwardness in speaking of spiritual things, which I could hardly attempt even to her. It was the thought that I had lost invaluable, irrecoverable opportunities, which both duty and affection should have engaged me to improve, that chiefly stung me. I thought I would have given the world to know that she was living, that I might at least discharge my engagements by writing, though I was never to see her again. This was a sharp lesson, but I hope it did some good. When I had thus suffered some weeks, I thought of sending a small vessel to Antigua. I did so, and it brought me several packets. These restored my health and peace, and gave me a strong contrast of the Lord's goodness to me, and my unbelief and ingratitude toward Him. August 1753, I returned to Liverpool. My stay was very short at home that voyage, only 6 weeks. In that time, nothing very memorable occurred. I shall therefore continue with an account of my third and last voyage.